Steve, thanks very much. Just before we start, Andrea, before we start, because you will be formally introduced,
okay,
because you deserve that.
Thank you, Bill.
Last week, during the news, Steve was talking about sports, and he said that one team would be entertaining another team.
I did it again.
Well, today, do you know the one I'm gonna refer to?
Were the Bulls entertaining? Someone was entertaining.
Somebody basketball. Was entertaining
Illinois
another team.
Was entertaining Longwood? I don't remember.
Well, today,
Illinois entertaining would be entertaining because they're not so great.
They're not so great.
Yeah.
But I asked you, what does a team do when they do entertain another team? My guess is maybe they take them out to a show and have dinner with them. But you said, no, they play the game. It's just the wording of it is such that we say entertaining. And today you said Longwood comes calling. I enjoyed
that very much.
You
know why I said that?
No, why?
Because right before that I said the Bulls are entertaining Utah. I'm like, oh, my, Bill's listening.
No.
What do I say now? I don't want to say plays.
No, you paint a beautiful picture of what two teams are doing to have a good time.
I don't know where Longwood is, but doesn't it sound like a respectable Southern
sure
institution?
Does. Yes, it does.
How about they're hoping to give the Jazz the Blues?
Oh.
That'd be entertaining.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, your time is done, okay?
Oh, it's just beginning, baby.
That voice you hear there, that's Andrew. Andrew Darlis, of course. Hi, Andrew. How are you?
I'm Wendy today. I'm one of the...
Filling in.
I'm a dancing Wendy. You know,
yes.
Although I'm not dancing.
You can dance if you want to. You can leave your cares behind.
Because if friends don't dance,
then they're no friends of ours. Andrea filling in for Wendy both today and tomorrow, and then Friday, Andrea. And this is big news.
It's huge.
The big Christmas extravaganza, the WGN Christmas show. Honestly, hours in the planning, hours in the making.
Right.
It's going to be fantastic, and
now,
that'll take place Friday.
Will it be a little different for you? Because you are normally one of the main stars of the Christmas performance.
Yeah.
Well, Bob Cratchit one year.
Here's what, I hope I'm not giving too much away, but in years past, they've done a full Christmas play. They've done Miracle on 34th Street. They've done A Christmas Carol. They've done several different versions of these. And it's always fun. You know, we all get to play characters. And this year, you know, because it costs money to bring in one of these plays, bring in a script and stuff, it's like $20. So they said, we don't have that kind of money this year. So we'll write a show. And then all the kids from WGN will perform in the show. And then they told me I'd be the one writing it.
Oh,
I didn't know that.
You didn't even know that till when?
Yesterday. They called me yesterday and said, you got to write this thing because it's Friday. So it'll be interesting, won't it?
I'm totally looking forward to it. I don't even know what we're doing. I know each show is kind of doing their own thing.
Yeah, every show here on WGN is responsible for a segment. So from 10 o'clock till noon, you'll hear pretty much the entire lineup, not in actual order, but in a different order, and everybody will be responsible for their own segments.
It's like one big fruitcake. It's like one big,
That's the perfect way to describe what the show will be.
Yeah.
One big fruitcake.
I'm glad that we're doing this because did you notice, you always got kind of like a main role, but those of us who got second choir, second chair.
Andre and I were always like the lady in the back.
Yeah, that's not fair.
I was so tired. And then you'd get management saying, oh, there's no small roles, only small actors.
Yes.
I'm like, yeah, okay, tell that to Scrooge and, the people who get the big parts every year.
It's not always fair.
Although it is hard to, memorize that one line. So it,
well,
it takes
sure,
a lot.
Because you want to say it just right. You only get one chance at
it.
Hey, Andre, it's radio. You don't have to have it memorized.
Oh, that's right.
You don't have to.
See, I wasted my time with that line and everything. I did.
You go the extra mile. Well, this year they gave me a list of names. They said, here's a bunch of people who work on WGN who aren't really affiliated with one show in particular, so you have to work all of them in.
Yes.
So I went, I can do that for you. So I wrote a nice part for Brian Noonan, and then I see Brian Noonan, and he goes, I can't be there on Friday.
Oh.
So then I have to undo that one. And then I write a nice part for Matt Bubala, and they say, well, Matt Bubala, sadly, he has a prior commitment, so he can't do it.
Right, like Steve Dale.
Steve Dale.
You wrote his part.
Same thing with him. I found out Milt Rosenberg, did you know he's no longer with the station? So I had to cross that out. There's no more Milt Rosenberg part.
So you are back to, the director's cut now.
There's a lot of, when you see the final script, there's a lot of arrows and carrots and that sort of thing. It's not quite as clean as you'd want it to be because there's been a lot of changes to the lineup.
It happens, right? It's acting.
Yeah.
It's Hollywood.
But it'll be fun. It's Friday at 10 o'clock in this time slot from 10 till noon.
Okay, I'm looking forward to
that. And then from noon to 1. We'll think about what we've done and we'll promise to never do it again.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's how it's going to work.
We'll critique it. We'll have others critique it.
Are you surprised at what took place in Alabama yesterday with Judge Roy Moore not winning?
I actually was.
I'm very surprised.
Didn't you think he was going to win?
Yes.
I don't think. Well, I mean, I'll just say it. I didn't really want him to win.
No.
I didn't. I thought he would win, though.
Yeah.
I really did.
So what do you think, and Steve, please feel free to jump in on this as well. What do you think it meant for him to not win? Is this, like in my head, I go, well, this is a victory for decency. Mm-hmm. Although I'm sure there's plenty of people who would think otherwise. Yeah. But in my head, you got a guy who's seemingly a child molester running for office. Maybe he shouldn't be in the office, maybe.
Right.
Right.
Maybe he should not be running. Exactly.
So, yeah, more times than not, you take that guy out of an election. But everybody kept saying, you got to let the people of Alabama decide.
I think it would quiet a lot of people. But I don't know if Steve Bannon is one of those people who will be discouraged by it, you know.
Yeah.
But he kind of, you know, I don't want to say he made this guy, because Roy Moore's been around for a long time, but Bannon certainly championed him.
Sure.
Campaigned with him hard, was there on election night headquarters last night, and, you know, Bannon is threatening to run all these people against the Republican establishment, kick out Mitch McConnell and all of that, and he's had two pretty significant losses in
yes.
the last few weeks.
Yes, he has. Yes, he has. So Donald Trump quickly just kind of distanced himself from Roy Moore, right? He just kind of said, well, you know, this guy's going to have a hard time from now on.
He said he backed Luther Strange in the primary because he knew Moore couldn't win the general election.
Oh, interesting.
And now he didn't. But, you know, he was campaigning pretty hard for Roy Moore.
He did the robocalls for him.
He
did a couple of stops.
He didn't go into Alabama, but he went to Pensacola, which
right.
is a media market for Alabama.
Yeah.
He certainly talked up the need to keep Jones out of the Senate.
And this was the first time a Democrat had won in Alabama in 20-some-odd years, Steve. Is that about right?
The last 25 Democrat
years.
25
who
years?
Won, the last Democrat who won switched parties.
Really?
Richard Shelby, who's the sitting Republican senator,
yeah.
actually was first elected to the Senate as a Democrat. And after, I think this would have been during the Clinton years probably, after the first couple years, he said, who am I kidding?
Yeah.
And became a Republican.
Yeah. So what do you think happens now with Roy Moore? What does he do now? I mean, he still hasn't made a concession speech, and I don't mean short term, but I mean long term. Does he try to stay in politics after what happened yesterday, or does he not?
I saw there was a Twitter hashtag offering to buy him horse riding lessons.
Good.
So
how
that.
Cocky? I mean, it seemed cocky yesterday when he did it, but now as you look back and he didn't win the election, to ride in to vote on a horse seems like something you might have done 120 years ago, but maybe not today.
Well, I guess he's done it before, so it's not his first time. And
it's
I don't,
not his first rodeo.
I don't know from horses, but I was watching him yesterday. I'm like, it doesn't look very good.
No, it didn't look very good.
I'm listening to people today saying, yeah, he didn't really have a very good ride there.
Yeah, both
but
figuratively and literally.
Right.
Yeah.
As far as his future, I mean, I would imagine he's, you know, twice been elected to the Supreme Court there. I don't imagine that he would do much in the future, but who knows?
The mere fact that the race was so close, does that give him cause? Does he now have reason
no,
to believe?
No, it shouldn't have been close.
But it was close. It was neck and redneck all night long, wasn't it?
That's good.
Thanks.
Very good.
That was 10 minutes of conversation just to get to that joke.
No, it wasn't. Exactly. No, it wasn't. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's more to discuss. If you want to jump in, you know how to reach us. We're at 312-981-7200. You can call us there, or you could text us there. Bill Leff, and it's Andrea Darlis. Andrea is sitting in for Wendy. Wendy has the rest of the year off, but she will be back on January 2nd. That seems like a long time.
Yeah, it does. It's funny when you say the rest of the, would say they're like day, the week,
year.
Rest of the year.
Rest of the year.
Wow.
2 weeks, a little over 2 weeks.
Yeah,
but
she's recovering.
That's recoup time.
Yeah.
You got to give her time. All right, so earlier today, word came down the pike, or do you call it the internet, that Omarosa is stepping down from her office in the White House.
Okay, and I didn't even know that she was working in the White House.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I didn't. I watched The Apprentice. I know the whole Omarosa background. I knew she was working for Trump, but I thought it was just at a business venture. I didn't know it was in the White House.
It's a very strange relationship. I mean, everything about Trump being president is strange when you think about it. Well, I mean, when you stop and think about it, every part of it's weird. But the mere fact that he met this woman who was painted as a villain, they turned her into she may be a villain, but they played her into a super villain.
Oh, yeah.
On The Apprentice. So then she campaigns for Trump. He likes her. He names her to office.
Mm-hmm.
She's with the White House, and now she is not. It says in the press release, Omarosa Manigault Newman.
Remember, she was Stallworth?
Right.
She's Stallworth, and then
Newman. Then she married Alfred E. Newman from Mad Magazine, has resigned her post.
Yeah.
Newman resigned on Tuesday. The White House officials told multiple outlets she will continue her job through January the 20th.
Mm-hmm.
We wish her the best in future endeavors. We are grateful for her service, this according to Sarah Sanders. Everyone I know who has a story about her, the story is negative.
Exactly,
not
yes.
Not a single person I've ever encountered who has a good story about her.
Right. We heard Billy Deck tell a story off the air about her, and it was
not favorable.
Not super positive, no.
Jasmine, our producer, had a run-in with her.
Yeah, at a conference.
Jasmine's the nicest person in the world, and she had a run-in with her.
Absolutely.
Are you at liberty, Jasmine? Can you say this story, or is this not for air?
I don't know.
You know the Google part, right?
Oh, yeah, the Google part when she told went to a conference in August and she was moderating. And one of the things that the guy asked her, the moderator was saying, so what do you do at the White House? And she says, well, you can Google that. I don't know why that question has come up.
That's a legitimate question.
Yeah, that was her answer.
It's a very good question.
And then she just flicked her hair and she's like, anything else?
Oh, my God.
What kind of attitude is that?
She's not a nice person.
No, that's what everybody says.
And that's such a simple question. They're not asking, you know, not to pick a political side or even talk politics or anything that could fuel the fire. They're just saying, what do you do? Which I just had to Google, too. I didn't know
she
was working on outreach to historically black colleges and universities and dealing with racial disparities in the military system.
Yeah.
Okay. That's admirable. Why wouldn't you just say, this is what I do?
So you can say that. That's legit.
I had to Google it. But
why is she, did we know why she's stepping down?
It just says to pursue other opportunities.
Well, there's different reporting there, too. I
mean, what do you know about it, Steve? What is it? Have you been told something that's not in these reports?
There's a New York Times reporter who tweeted out that she was actually escorted off the premises yesterday.
Oh, really?
And that it wasn't really a resignation at all.
Oh.
So if that's the case, then why would they say your departure date is effective January 20th
well,
as opposed
to... Well, I think they just do that, Andre. I mean, they want
to...
They just they,
to, face.
To make it
just
seem more palatable.
Yeah. Right. And so then her story can be, I'm leaving a year after I started. Well, looks like she left yesterday.
Looks better on
a
resume.
Run-in with Chief of Staff Kelly.
Interesting. Interesting.
That's just from a couple of tweets from reporters, and if they're tweeting it, then they're reporting it. So.
Yeah.
Am I imagining this, or was she in some sort of a relationship with Michael Clark Duncan? Am I imagining that?
I don't know.
For some reason, like every time I think about her, I go, oh, yeah, she used to go out with the guy from the Green Mile. But if I'm imagining that, I don't know why I would be imagining
that. I'm going to do what Omarosa would tell me to do. I'm going to Google that just to find out.
That I think that's the best way to pay tribute to her today is anytime there's something that might be or might not be, we do what she says. We Google it.
You know, we could ask Bill Rancic was on. He won. Didn't he win The Apprentice
the year
she was on? Wasn't he the first
was
apprentice?
That the first year? Yeah, maybe she was on the first
and
year.
And he'd always tell stories, some favorable, some not completely favorable about her, but he might know that.
Well, all we know for sure is she is stepping down. As Steve implied, there may be more to it than just her deciding to step down. We don't know yet. We will Google that as well.
I'm Googling, Michael Clark Duncan and Omarosa.
See what it says. If I'm imagining it, I have no idea why I would think that.
Apparently, they were engaged.
They were. All right.
Holy cow, who knew?
They seem an unlikely couple.
Yes, they did.
Right?
He passed away, obviously.
About two years ago?
2012.
No, that
long
ago?
Yeah, that long ago. Uh-huh. Yep. And they were engaged. Okay, I didn't know that.
Don't they seem like two people that you'd want to take Michael aside and go, Michael, I'm not the boss of you,
buddy, what are you thinking?
Think about this
exactly.
Just a little bit, please. All right, we'll take a quick break. Oh, this is so exciting. Sometime between now and the end of the show, the regular show, 12 o'clock, because you and I will do the bonus hour from 12 to 1 upstairs. But sometime between
that.
Bonus hour. Between now and noon, a pair of tickets to give away to Carol Burnett. Carol Burnett is coming to the Chicago Theater. It's a couple months down the line, but tickets are becoming very, very hard to get. We have a pair of tickets for you. You can win those later. Stick around. It's Bill and Andrea in for Wendy on WGN. Steve, thank you very much. It's Bill Leff. It's Andrea Darlis. Andrea's sitting in for Wendy. Wendy's taking some time off. She'll be back soon. Jeff Kroll joins us right now. Jeff is an attorney for Salvi, Shostak, and Pritchard, PC. He came on this time last year also, didn't you? We talked about the difference in rules of the road and laws driving, and we wanted to discuss that again this year. How are you?
Like a locust. You know, we come back every so often.
Yeah, right. But you don't make that annoying noise. You did last year, but we asked you not to.
Security came pretty quickly.
They were very serious about that, weren't they? Yeah, I remember. So how does it stand this year? Have there been as many changes in the rules of the road or not as many?
There are fewer changes. And really, to be candid with you, fewer that are going to impact drivers per se, but I think they're going to be life-saving in many respects.
Oh, that's good news.
Yeah. Well,
can we go back to something last year? Because I remember we discussed this. They didn't really change, but they were gonna spend more time on people that were texting while driving.
I could speak for an hour on that subject. That drives me crazy. They're not addressing it at all. For
example, I know.
If you're driving in the city of Chicago and you're 11 miles over speed limit, it's a $100 fine.
Yeah.
If you're texting, it's a $75 fine. Just to give you an idea, I've got a son that's 16. Teenagers are four times more likely to be texting while driving. These recalcitrant teenagers that think they know everything.
Yeah.
The typical person looks down at their phone for 4.6 seconds. If you're doing 55 miles an hour,
yeah,
you're traveling over the length of a football field in just that 4.6 seconds. And
all right.
It's sad.
There's several things I need to ask you about that. Number one is they keep making laws saying you can't do it, but they're not enforcing the laws. Why aren't they enforcing the laws? It is a matter of life and death. You should not be texting while driving.
There's no bite to these laws. You know, what's stopping people from doing it? If you know, like, for example, a DUI, you get a DUI, you know I can go to prison.
Yeah.
It's going to be a hefty fine. Everybody's texting now.
But you can prove a DUI with the breathalyzer. Can you prove, is it that police aren't pulling people over because you can't? I mean, if I pull you over and say, were you texting? No. I mean, you'd have to go back and get the phone records, right?
I spoke with a police officer who said we'd be pulling people over all day, every day.
That's fine. Right. Do it.
Yeah, I agree. If it saves one life,
right,
it's worth it.
It's worth it.
So this year, I was hoping to see more stringent laws involving drinking while texting. That's another law that
you should not drink and text for so many reasons.
Texting malpractice right here. But there's nothing really. There's one new law that I find interesting, but it's kind of ridiculous in a sense. There's a new law, and it's because of a young man named Brendan Burke who was killed in Hoffman Estates. He was 21 years old, Southsider, went to Queen of Martyrs, Mount Carmel High School. He was in a car, and someone test driving a motor vehicle got in an accident because they had, you know, the signs, for sale signs,
yes,
et cetera.
Yes.
It was blocking his vision. So now a dealer cannot put a for sale sign or, you know, all the, you know, where they put the miles.
The stickers.
Yeah. They can only go on the back windows. They can't go on the driver's side window or the passenger side window, nor the front window. So that's a nice move.
Yeah.
But why not do that for every car?
Right.
Why not do that for every vehicle? Why just dealerships when you're test driving?
So many cars, too, now, if you notice, the newer cars, if you're trying to put in an address or anything, or even Waze, if you try and activate Waze while you're driving, it'll say either no or uh-oh, you have to say I'm the passenger.
It'll ask you. My phone does a thing. Are you currently driving? And you have to check yes or no.
Yeah. Most people probably put passenger, I'm the passenger.
Yeah, everybody says passenger.
Yeah.
A couple months ago, I was in a minor, just a little collision near my house. A lady came and hit me. And I was sure by what I saw during the accident that she was either talking on her cell phone or she was texting. So when the police officer arrived, I said, could you please confiscate the phone and check it? Because I'm positive that lady was texting. He goes, I can't do that. I said, but this is the difference in the accident, is whether or not she was texting. He goes, it's an invasion of her privacy. I can't do it.
That's someone that's lazy. And that's someone, because if it, thank goodness you're okay.
Yeah.
If this was a significant,
it was a minor accident,
he would have got the phone. It happens all the time.
So really?
It's just a minor, when it goes back to pulling people over for texting, they'd be doing that all day. They're not going to make a federal investigation out of this car accident when it's a minor accident.
But you see it as often as I do, right? There's not a day that goes by. If I'm driving 2 miles, I'll see a half a dozen people just texting
easily
while driving.
Yeah.
And
on,
not just in intersections.
Or on the phone, too.
But I see women putting makeup on or mascara.
Oh, that's different.
And men,
that's
too.
Fine. Yeah. You know, that's fine. That's different.
The guys
from
KISS.
Yeah. So people shaving. I've seen people shaving.
That's fun.
Yeah, that's not dangerous.
People barbecuing while they're driving. Driving, yes, you shouldn't do
hibachi
that.
Hibachi grill.
That's excessive.
Smoke coming out.
Yeah.
But it's this texting. You know, I've got a 16-year-old boy that's driving now. And I'm deathly afraid of that because these kids think they're infallible at this age. They think it won't happen to me. And that's why that's the problem with this texting. It won't happen to me. I'm a good texter.
Everyone believes that.
I'm a good texter.
You know what's interesting, though? My daughters tell me, now they're a little bit older now, but when they were learning to drive, they said, it's not my friends who keep texting and driving, it's their parents. Whenever we're in a car and the mom is driving or the dad is driving, they're the ones, because they didn't grow up with the culture of texting.
Right.
We know it's not a good idea, but it's so new to parents that they're the ones who are doing it. Is that possible?
Well, you know, I think anything's possible. Of course, that's a great excuse for your kids kind of
right.
thing. But you know, my son, I can tell you how fast he's traveling in a vehicle because we've got apps, certain kinds of apps, like on our phone.
That record it?
We know what time he comes in the house, what time he leaves, where he's at all times.
Wow.
And, you know, so we're
and
not...
And he knows you have this?
To an extent. You know.
There's going to have to be... Because I do sympathize with that. Honestly, police would be pulling... I'd rather have them patrolling my neighborhoods for carjackers. I mean, I live mm-hmm. in the city, as opposed mm-hmm. to pulling everybody over for texting. And I know that's wrong. But there should almost be some sort of software for 2018 that they could put on your phone that nobody can text in the car.
Yeah.
Either I'd be fine with that.
While the car's moving. While the car's moving.
I agree with that. That maybe that's the next great app.
But. Has anyone come out with figures, insurance companies, saying, here's what it looked like before we had texting, and here's what it looks like now, just to say, here's how serious it's become?
Well, there's stats out from the federal government. For example, distracted driving, texting, is believed to contribute to more than 50% of all teen accidents.
Wow.
More
that.
Than 50%.
Yeah. Wow.
And, you know, the other day I saw, we've got this little dog that almost ran across, our little dog that almost ran across the street and got hit, and my wife would have been very upset. But
sure.
I don't know if I would have lost sleep because it's barking and I got to take
it out
every day. But there was a kid driving in a car, a big SUV, literally looking down at her phone,
right.
texting and driving,
yeah.
oblivious
gotta
to her surroundings.
It's got to stop.
Yeah. And the problem is, what's going to stop it? If it's a $75 fine, I don't know if that's really a big deterrent
it
to
isn't.
These kids.
It isn't.
A second offense is $100.
But it should be more like the driving while intoxicated laws, where you could literally lose your license just for doing this.
Right. There's
that's
the,
what
the
it
three
should
biggest,
come to.
There was last year, or 2016, 40,000 deaths from driving. And the three biggest causes were distracted driving, drinking, and speeding. And I'm willing.
In that
to,
order?
Not in that order.
Not in that order?
DUIs were the number one, then speeding, and then distracted driving. But we don't really know how many people were involved in the accidents were texting. People aren't going to. First thing, a police officer pulls you over, you're not going to say, listen, I didn't see him, I was texting.
Right.
No one's going to say
that. But you remember the study a couple of years ago where they said it's just as dangerous, if not more dangerous, to be behind somebody who's texting while driving than a drunk driver.
It's
how serious is that?
That's ridiculous. Yeah. I almost got hit coming downtown the other day by someone that drifted over on the Eisenhower that was texting.
Yeah.
And, I beeped, said a couple things.
Yeah.
Can't repeat on radio.
Some of them impolite.
Yeah. Yeah.
Please don't be texting, sir.
Jerk.
Yeah.
But it's ridiculous
it's
right now.
It's gotten out of hand.
I saw a police officer texting. While driving.
Yeah, I've seen that myself.
And that's...
More than once.
Not, that's why they're not pulling people over.
Texting each other. Yeah, it's frightening.
The laws do have to be stricter, though.
I think so.
Yeah, as far as the fines.
Don't you think so?
Fines should be higher.
Jeff Kroll is here, an attorney, telling you about the rules of the road changes for last year into this year, or this year into next year, I guess would be more accurate. We'll pick this up in just a little bit. If you'd like to jump in, we'd love to have you. Don't text it, though.
No.
Call it in at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Andrea in for Wendy on WGN. Thanks, Andrea. It's Bill Leff. It's Andrea Darlis. Andrea's sitting in for Wendy. Jeff Kroll is here. He comes by about once a year, like you said, Jeff, similar to the locusts, a little more often than the locusts.
Like Santa Claus.
Yeah, like Santa. Oh, yeah. When I see you, I say, well, Santa's coming next, I bet. Jeff is here to make you aware of some driving laws that have changed from 2017 into the new year 2018. You've already told us about the signage law, and go over that really quickly again. Is this just strictly for car dealers or for others?
It's strictly for car dealers, and I just don't understand why the legislature didn't take the next step and made it all vehicles.
It should have been all vehicles.
I think it's all vehicles. I saw a vehicle today that literally had signs everywhere advertising that he does repair work.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just all over his windows.
Yeah.
And I just don't understand why not. What's the downside?
You need to be able to have full vision through every window. That doesn't seem like
a
good thing.
It's a bad thing. So I don't understand. They took a step in the right direction mm-hmm. with the car dealerships, but I don't understand why you don't extend that to everything.
That's crazy. Yeah. I don't get it. All right, give us a couple more.
One more that I find fascinating, because I have a 16-year-old, is every year there are 300 people in Illinois that die awaiting an organ.
Yeah.
Donor. Illinois now, it was the second state that we are kind of late in the game. 16 and 17-year-olds now can be organ donors if they so wish.
Very good.
And I think it's a great law.
Yeah.
Because now maybe some, you know, just think about it. These recalcitrant teenagers that don't want to help anyone can be saving a life someday down the road. And it's just amazing.
And it's just as simple as signing the back of your driver's license, right? There's a little slot on the back, a little line. You sign your name. That's all it takes.
And I believe now if you're 16 or 17, you can go to a website for, you know, the Secretary of State and indicate you now would like to be an organ donor starting in 2018.
Oh, very, very nice.
So that's a great law, I think. One law that was a little controversial for some groups is typically when you get a police report, if you're in an accident, there's a police report, it goes to a couple different agencies throughout the state, and that's it. Now it could be subject to going to several different federal agencies, state agencies that otherwise would never have seen the police reports. Some people are arguing that, you know, that the breach is
invasion of privacy.
Exactly.
So what's the purpose of it going to more agencies?
There might be more studies done. Some different agencies may want to be doing a different study involving accidents. You know, maybe it's accidents at this intersection. Maybe it's accidents involving this vehicle. So I think it's a good thing that it's not a downside.
Yeah.
The other thing is Illinois buses used to, every 6 months, they were being inspected to make sure they're okay. Now it's every year. And at first I was like, why is that? Why are you moving it back a year, 6 months for the safety of these children?
Right.
But that conforms with the federal guidelines. So they're just kind of going lockstep with the federal guidelines.
Since you brought that up, this is a topic Wendy and I had several months ago, and it comes to seat belts on school buses. You would think that that's a natural. Who would want a seat belt more than a child on a school bus? But they don't seem to have them. Is there a reason that we know of that they don't?
I don't know. Once again, I don't see the downside to having seatbelts. Unless it's, they're afraid of rollovers or something where the kids couldn't get out of it. I don't know.
Maybe.
But logistically, I don't get it.
But everywhere you go, they say seatbelts save lives. You got to buckle up. And then when you're on a school bus, there's no seatbelt to be found.
It's amazing. You know what's interesting? Because when we grew up, seatbelts weren't as big a deal.
Right.
And now, I mean, you get kids that sit in the car. First thing they're doing is they're putting their seatbelts on because they're just so...
And they tell you. Yeah. You forget, buckle up.
Yeah.
And so I think that whole seatbelt phenomenon since we grew up is really a great thing.
I've told this story before. When I was a kid, you know, there's always everybody knows about the front dashboard, but a lot of cars had a back dashboard. And when I was very little, that's where I would take a nap while my mom or dad was driving. I don't think you could do that today.
No, I don't
think
so.
Pretty sure you can't.
But you could put signage up there.
Right, yeah, right.
That's true.
And for some, our mom was the original seatbelt.
Yes.
Exactly.
When they didn't have their arm, exactly.
Yeah. Those were the good old brace things. You with their arm.
Of course, my mom, she must have had the longest arms in the history of my family because she can just swat me from the front seat when I was sitting in the back seat.
So with a lot of these laws, and everyone we just mentioned today, this is a new law, 2017 into 2018. Some of them seem so obvious. Why do they take so long to enact these laws? What's going on there?
You think something takes a long time in the government?
I didn't mean to infer that. No, absolutely not.
Yeah, I don't know. Some of these just seem so basic. And sadly, like this young man that passed away from that car accident, it takes a death or something serious to invoke these laws. And I don't know what... they've got to do something with this texting while driving.
Right.
I love the idea of if you're in a vehicle moving, you can't text or, you know, what have you. Of course, when I'm driving, my wife's texting the entire time as a passenger.
Right.
So
I'm okay with that. I mean, it makes it tough to have a conversation, but it doesn't endanger anybody. But yeah, while driving, never. There's never a time where it's okay.
And a show like yours is a great platform to get that message out, and I applaud you for doing that. But it's something's got to get done on this.
But honestly, I've said this to my wife, and she goes, "You're crazy." If they appointed me a deputy, I would spend an hour every day just pulling people over for texting and driving. I would love nothing more than to get those texters off the road. It's just so dangerous. And I can see, I'm sure you're the same way. You can see somebody near you and you go, that person is either drunk or they're texting. There's no way in the world somebody could drive that badly.
You'd be like Barney Fife.
Yeah, you would be.
I'd be pulling people over left and right. I would. Are you okay to take a couple quick phone calls? All right, let me see how many of these we can get in. Hey, Jim, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
You're on the line. Go ahead. Thank you, sir. Jeff Kroll is here. Good. Did you have a question for him?
Yeah, I got a couple, a real quick one. I got a warning ticket stopped at a stoplight for being on a cell phone.
Wow.
You know, the officer said you can't be on a cell phone or texting even at a stoplight. That's one thing real quick. But a couple of the suburbs started, they're starting this month with swabbing drivers for DUI. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, I think you have to have some probable cause to be able to do that. They just can't do it to every citizen that, right. that I think you need
no,
some.
No, they're not doing every citizen. If they pull you over for a DUI and they're not quite sure that you don't want to blow the alcohol, they want to swab you for drugs. I think they said it was five different types of drugs, but they're also getting your DNA in that. What's going on there with that?
I have not heard about that. That's interesting.
You know what? Honestly, though, I think that's a fantastic idea for a multitude of reasons, not just for that, but what if somebody disappears, or this phrase that I hate, goes missing?
Yeah.
You know, and then they're looking for you, and they're trying to find maybe a child, God forbid, but they want to check your DNA. You know, I think for a multitude of reasons, that probably
is not a bad thing.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
But you're against it, right, Jim?
California.
They do it in California?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Jim, thank you. I appreciate the phone call.
Watch those stoplights.
All right.
Yeah, thanks, Jim.
Take care. I didn't want to say it with him here, although I could have. I'm okay with that because what happens is if somebody's texting at a stoplight, what happens is when the light changes, they're still finishing up their text, and somebody's not going to make the light because that guy was texting.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. That's where you'd give the ticket.
That's where I would come in. First, I'd throw my uniform on, my auxiliary policeman's uniform.
Bill Fife.
Yes. Then I would. Right. That's when you'll see me. Jeff, thank you. It was always great to see you. If people want to reach you, the best way to do it is what?
Probably email jkroll, K-R-O-L-L, at selvylaw.com.
Perfect. That's Jeff Kroll. We'll take a quick break and then some news and then more show. Do we still have a pair of tickets to give away to see Carol Burnett?
Yes.
We do. Yeah, that's coming up before it's all over today. Stick around, Bill and Andrea, and for Wendy on WGN. Thank you so much, Steve. Before this hour is over, sometime between now and 12 o'clock, you and I will give a listener a pair of tickets to see the great Carol Burnett, who's performing at the Chicago Theater early in 2018.
And I saw her last time she came to town.
Did you?
She was awesome.
Oh, I love Carol Burnett.
She was so good.
Well, somebody's going to get tickets, Andrea. I don't know who. Nobody knows who yet. We'll figure it out later. Dr. John Duffy is here, clinical psychologist, best-selling author, podcaster for Undue Anxiety, which you can listen to over on WGN+. I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, John. Your book, The Available Parent, you could certainly get that to somebody for Christmas, right?
You could wrap that up really easy.
He'd be happy.
Absolutely.
Happy to have it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Andy Williams tells us that this is the most wonderful time of the year, but for some people, it is not.
Right.
Hard to believe.
It's a dirty lie for some people.
Yeah.
This is true. Right.
Yeah.
This is a time of year where I think most of us feel the celebration and kind of get into the spirit of things. But there is a significant subset of people, a lot of whom we clinicians work with, who are deeply depressed. This is the toughest time of year for them. They're sad, sometimes anxious. That's often an artifact of having lost somebody in this past year, having lost a job, having had some significant negative life change.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just the anniversary of something that's gone wrong, that kind of empty chair at the Christmas table syndrome, you know, and what do we do about this? And do we maintain the rituals we've already had, or do we need to do something different? How do we honor what's happened?
Yes.
And then there's just the people who are lonely and alone, and it's a very difficult time of year for them. So it's important to consider kind of the all of us and what we're all going through.
All right. So question number one, and I don't know if there's a clear cut answer for this, but if you have some sort of relationship with somebody that experiences what you just described, a seasonal depression around the holidays, is there a correct way to handle it, or does it vary from person to person?
When I talk to people, oftentimes they'll say like, oh, people drop stuff off for me. That's so nice. I wish they would knock. I wish they would sit down and talk with me. Even if it's unpleasant, even if it's not about, you know, Christmas, but it's about what I've gone through, I would rather talk to people than not talk to people. I'd rather hear from them.
Okay, so kind of a segue to that. My dad passed away a few years ago, and my mom to this day is still like, oh, you know, around the holidays. And she's a happy person, but around the holidays, and I find myself sometimes saying, well, oh, just be happy. No, it's Christmas. Just be happy. And it's so easy to kind of fall back on that. But that is that one of the worst things to say to someone who's going through a tough time, maybe for a few days or so around this?
It's probably the best intentioned worst thing to say.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
And,
because,
and as I hear myself saying it, oh, be happy. I'm like, don't say that.
Right. Well, because we all need our feelings acknowledged in the moment, right? And sometimes we're just not happy, you know, even though there's this, there's press to be happy this time of year, which I think makes it tougher for some people because everybody's happy. Every commercial suggests we're supposed to be happy. Mm-hmm. Walking down Michigan Avenue suggests it. And yet, you know, we're just not feeling that. So to just have your moment and your feeling acknowledged means an awful lot to people. And it's hard to do because we want our mothers and the people we love to be happy, you know. So it's hard not to press that and say, how are you doing today, Mom? You know, like, and it's a, but it just changes the discussion and probably opens it up and allows her maybe to kind of vent something and then be happy, you know?
Right.
I'm fascinated by something you just said, John, and that is that for most of the year, you know, you have your good days, you have your bad days, but come December, where everywhere you look, it's bright Christmassy colored lights and there's, you know, toys in every window, and you just say to yourself, how do I deal with this? I'm supposed to be, this is the time of the year I'm supposed to be at my best, and yet for some reason I'm not.
Yeah.
So if not so much somebody close to that person, but if you are that person, what do you do with that?
Right. Well, it's important to recognize that this is probably the time of year where there are more supposed to's than any other time of
year.
And it's difficult when you're struggling to work through the supposed to. So,
right. So
the way to deal with it is sometimes just to ask somebody who's been through something, what do you need? You know, like, because I don't know how to do this any better than anybody else. And I suspect you don't either.
Yes.
You know, just because somebody lost somebody doesn't mean they're an expert in grief, right?
Right.
You know, they don't know what to do any more than anybody else does. So sometimes it's nice to know, okay, I'm collaborating with somebody. We're working through this thing together.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Does this figure into it also? All of a sudden, when you get from Thanksgiving and then in through the holidays, and that includes New Year's Eve, New Year's Day possibly, you're thrown in with people that even though they're your family, that doesn't always guarantee that everybody's going to gel quite right.
No.
You know?
No, and that doesn't necessarily require a loss or something tragic to have happened, right? Sometimes we just have personality clashes.
Yeah.
And we have to be prepared that, you know, this might not go exactly according to plan.
Yeah.
So, you know, I always encourage people who want that perfect, you know, holiday experience.
Impossible.
Let go of that, right?
Yeah.
You know, that is not going to happen, and embrace the imperfection of it.
Yeah.
Is it okay to say, or not, is it okay to say to someone, maybe you should talk to someone, or maybe you should see someone, or should the person decide on their own, hey, you know what, I'm so sad, I need to go see someone? Or is it okay to suggest it?
I think it's always okay to suggest it, you know, without accusation, you know.
Yeah,
I think it's becoming more and more okay to say that. You know, I think my profession has lost some of its taboo over the years, I like to think. So I think it's okay to say, boy, wouldn't it be nice to be able to just talk this through with somebody who's objective and can really offer you some guidance through this, because I'm so close to you. You know, your mom, for example, I'm so close to you that I don't know if I can offer the right help.
Right.
But I think we can find the person who can. That's a great idea.
Yeah. But, John, you must know people that would be offended by that, because I think that's a good thing. That's somebody caring about you saying, hey, let's try our best to fix this. But I'm sure there's people out there that would just take that the wrong way, aren't there?
Yeah, I think you might want to couch it in the reality that I don't think you're doing this wrong.
Yeah.
I just think it's really hard to do this. And sometimes we just want to use all the tools at our disposal. Therapists are among those tools.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go back to something we talked about almost at the very beginning, and that is that at the holiday time, and Andrea told a great story about missing her dad. The first few years that my mom had been not with us anymore after she had died, very, very rough at Christmas time. And then at some point I just realized, I don't think she would want us to be sad.
Yeah.
I don't think that my mom would want us to be spending our holidays just awfully sad because we missed her. We did miss her. And that kind of turned me around a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think we can probably all cite people we've lost. I've lost a couple of family members around the holidays, too.
Yeah.
And I fall back on that same thought, Bill, that, you know, like, I don't think my brother or my father would want us to just sit here sad.
No.
You know, that certainly wasn't never the point, right? So, and that might be kind of that push to create a new tradition that's a little more upbeat, or to spend some time telling, like, positive stories about them.
That's
and the holidays,
great.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That is so great.
Or doing like a toast to them, and
right.
Oh, they would. This was his favorite holiday, or you know, whatever it might be.
Just a ritual, a moment, right?
Yeah.
You know, just so they're acknowledged and they're not forgotten. And then oftentimes, the people who are closest to them can breathe and move on, knowing like, okay, that loss was acknowledged, right? We can really enjoy the moment now.
I think everybody's experienced this at some point when you have somebody close to you that has died, especially at holiday time. You'll be in a shopping center or something, and you'll see something and go, oh, that would be perfect for my mom. That would be excellent. And then you realize, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
So the first few times that happened to me, it really bothered me. I'm like, what's wrong with you? How could you not realize you're not getting her anything for Christmas? But then it became almost comical that I would think that way, because it's your own brain tricking you, kind of.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, there is a lengthy lag between a loss oftentimes and the real absorption of that loss. My father, for example, I was talking to my mother this morning on the way here. My father died almost 20 years ago. And sometimes we'll talk about him in the present tense.
Right.
You know what I mean? We can hear his voice and we're like, well, he hasn't been, you know, he never saw an iPhone. What are we talking about here? You know? And we can all kind of laugh at that, and move on. But, to recognize some of the absurdity of it is kind of probably lightens the mood.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Dr. John Duffy is here. Do you have any questions? As we mentioned, it's holiday time and it's not always the easiest time for everybody. Are you going through this yourself or somebody you care about going through it? We're at 312-981-7200. Back after this, it's Bill and Andrea and on WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Andrea Darlis sitting in for Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Dr. John Duffy, comes by every other Wednesday. We talk about the mind, the good and the bad in the mind. It's not imaginary. At holiday time, you're getting some depression, right? I mean, not everybody, but a lot of people go through it, correct?
No doubt. A surprising number of people go through it. You can ask anybody in my field, and they will tell you that their practices are burgeoning this time of year. Probably not good news.
One of the busiest times of the year.
Really?
Yep. All right, let's go to some calls, John. Let's start out with Dan. Dan, how are you?
I am fine, thanks, Bill. How are you? I love your show.
Thank you, sir. Dr. John Duffy is here. Do you have a question or a comment for him?
A comment, John, or whatever. I started a tradition with my family years ago. My father passed away about 14 years ago, and he used to, and I never knew why until I reached the age of 21, but when we would have a holiday in our home, my father would call all the men into the kitchen. He would cut them a nice big slice of salami, the kind you have to peel the skin off or whatever, you know, good hard salami. He would pour all the men, a shot of Jameson whiskey. They would do a toast, take the whiskey, and eat the salami, because women will never buy the salami for you. That's a disgusting piece of meat. But the men love the piece of meat. So every holiday, if I have Easter or if we have Christmas, we'll have Christmas Eve. When the last person arrives, I invite all the men. I do invite the women, but they don't want to come.
Yeah.
And we all have a shot of Jameson. We raise our glass to my father. We have a shot of Jameson and a good slice of salami. And the beauty of all of that is about 15 minutes later, none of the men care what's going on.
Right? And that's just the way the women want it, Dan.
Yes.
We just want you in there.
Yeah, the dinner can be late. The buns can be burnt.
Yeah.
All the guys have a nice smile on their face, and you remember my father for that nice feeling, and it's a great time. And we do it every year. And so my point is, I guess if you can tell someone, start a little tradition. Start a sugar cookie or a butter cookie that mom used to make, and everyone raise a glass and have a cookie to remember mom, and it's a nice thought.
I love
That's
Dan.
Nice.
Everything about that, yeah. I mean, and to start a new ritual or tradition in honor of somebody you've lost, a toast in particular, like you're talking about, you can't beat that. And you can tell from the tone of your voice that it does the trick, right? It honors your father, and it kind of it warms you up enough that the women can tolerate you in the other room as well. That's
exactly.
And
Dan, thank you.
It's exactly, and they're welcome to go back and have another shot and a piece of salami too.
What's wrong with that? Dan, thank you. Have a great holiday.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank
bye.
Actually, sounds like
Goodbye.
A pretty good lunch.
That's exactly what you're talking about. Do something that keeps the loved one in mind, no matter what it is. You can't go wrong with that.
Absolutely, and you can almost imagine Dan's story leading to other stories about his dad, right?
Sure.
You can imagine that there's not just one toast. There might be two or three, you know, that tell little stories about what happened in the past.
Without
a
doubt.
That's so cute.
Let's go to Rhonda. Hey, Rhonda, how are you?
Oh, I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. You have one of these too, don't you?
I do. I was just going to say my dad died about 3 years ago, and he always had his favorite chair in the living room, a swivel chair. And we kept it there. And my mom, you know, she's getting elderly. She'll get up during the night and sometimes think, you know, I saw Dad in that chair. I know he really wasn't there, but I think it's comforting to her. And just keeping that chair around, you know, we used to, like, not want to sit in it for a while, but now we all sit, take turns sitting in it, and she'll sit in it. But I think just having that favorite chair there is helping her get through it.
That's cool. That's so cool, Rhonda. And it's always interesting to hear people tell their stories and what conjures the memories, right? So the swivel chair seems to like what it does it for your family. And that's fascinating. And it'd be interesting to know what that that object is for other families that kind of bring them back to that person that they lost, you know. And I love the idea of people kind of shifting who's in the chair, you know, who gets that, that honored moment, you know. That's very neat.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think it doesn't matter. You know, she knows he's not really there, but I think it just is a good memory for everybody.
No
yeah.
question about it. Rhonda, thank you so much. Very sorry about your
thank
dad,
you.
But have a great holiday.
Oh, thanks so much.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye. John, my mom was a dance teacher, and every year we always opened our presents on Christmas Eve, and when the family was done opening the Christmas presents, my mom would open all the presents she received from her dance students. So usually we'd spend about 2 or maybe 3 hours opening these just god-awful gifts from her dance students. And they were just, it was one bad gift on top of another on top of another. And we all hated it, but we did it. And after she died, that was the thing that I missed the most about Christmas, was opening up those ridiculous Christmas presents. It sounds so silly, but I go, as much as I hated it, I really miss doing that.
Yeah, it was an integral part of the ritual for
yeah,
you, right?
It was. It really was. All right, now, we haven't discussed this, but this is also a real thing. There's something called post-holiday depression.
Yeah.
You get your excitement levels up so high during the holidays, and then you just kind of crash when the holidays are over. You've seen this before, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. This happens every year, January and February. These doldrums kind of set in because we've spent this month and a half preparing for these few hours, right?
Yeah.
And then those hours pass and they're celebratory and they can be really fun. For some people, they're a little disappointing, and then it's over. And then it's like there's winter kind of looming in front
yeah.
of people. And then so there's often like kind of a depression that kind of settles in the wake of that. And
yeah.
That's why we talk about things like, you know, intentions and resolutions for the new year, in order to kind of fire people up for kind of getting back in the game and back into the reengaging in their lives so that they don't settle too deep into that depression.
My mom and her friends call that hibernation, you know, because
oh, yeah.
and especially it's probably rougher here because it's so cold.
Yeah.
You can't go outside. You can't take a walk. You know, we don't see the sun as often as we do, say, in the spring or the summertime or
right.
even the fall. So is there anything that you can do to maybe, can you go somewhere? I mean, talk with somebody, just maybe get out of the house, go exercise?
Any of that. You know, okay. I always go with anything different and anything new. So if going somewhere where it's sunny and taking a week or two, if you can afford to do that and you've got the time and the energy to do that, absolutely. But if there's something you've put off doing, and I avoid the word resolution because it's so tightly tied to January 1st
sure.
that oftentimes, you know, you're disappointed if it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But just an intention or a start of something new. I'm going to get back to playing the guitar or relearn that. I'm going to get running shoes out for the first time in my life. But starting something new in the wake of the holidays is always a really positive thing for people. And it keeps them out of that depressive mode, right? Because it kind of one follows the other.
Let's just take the show to Florida for a
month. You want to do that? I'll do that. Yeah,
just
we
like
can
we'll
go to Florida
go
for a week
for
or two. Yes.
Just grab an end of the desk.
Yeah. Let's do that. Again, I know you avoided the word resolution, and I will too. But
yeah.
if you're one of those people who says, you know what, in the new year, here's something I'm going to do a lot more of, or here's something I'm going to do a lot less of. You see people the second week or third week in January start to kind of break that.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you should give up, right?
No.
You make a mistake or two. Don't give up. Stick with it.
Absolutely. Take the judgment out of it and make your goals really reasonable. So allow for, you know, blowing it on a couple of days.
Yeah.
So if it's like I'm going to exercise, you know, 7 days a week, cut that down to 4.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's 3 1 week, get back on that horse and go try it again next week. But don't look at it as a failure. You've got this intention. You're going to do something different. One bad day, one day where you don't meet that mark, shouldn't be the end of the world. Don't let it be the end of the world. Now,
solid advice. John, the podcast is always exciting. It's Undue Anxiety. You can hear that at WGN Plus. The book is available on Amazon or in bookstores, and it's available parents. Anything else? Are you going caroling? Can people book an appointment with you to hear you sing?
I may go caroling. I'll text you immediately
if it happens.
Absolutely.
That would especially be nice. If it's in Florida.
Yeah, especially. Have a great new year. Great to see you.
You do the same.
That's Dr. John Duffy. We'll take a quick break and then back to the show. Keep in mind, sometime between now and the end of our regular show that ends at 12, we have a pair of tickets to see Carol Burnett that we'll be happy to give to you. You got to work for them just a little bit. We'll get to that in just a little while.
With his light brown derby and his bright green tie, he was quite the handsomest of men. I started to yen, so I can't.
That's Carol Burnett, Andrea. Yeah. Can't deny that. That's Carol Burnett. One of the greatest that's ever been. She's performing at the Chicago Theater. We have a pair of tickets to give you in just a few moments. Not yet, just a couple moments. Here's what you need. Have this ready, 312-981-7200. Do not dial yet because Jasmine is going to clear the phone lines.
Yes.
So if you're dialing right now and I see people lining up, don't do it yet. Just be patient, everybody. First, last week on the show, my friend Randy Vineyard was up, and you know Randy. You've talked to Randy in the past.
Yeah.
Such a nice man. They lost their son, Jake. The Vineyards lost their son, Jake, to suicide. Very, very sad. But they're doing good things in his name. They have a foundation set up in his name. Here's a message from Randy. He wanted me to read to everybody. If you know somebody in the Spring Grove, Richmond area or surrounding communities that are in need, if they're struggling, they can benefit from Operation Feed 33. Get in touch with Randy Vineyard, a very, very good guy. His contact information is jakevineyardfoundation.com, jakevineyardfoundation.com, Vineyard, V-I-N-Y-A-R-D. They do very good things for a lot of people, and if you need help, please go there. That's the Jake Vineyard Foundation. Okay, now would be a great time to dial.
Yeah.
Dial 312-981-7200. What I'd like to do is fill up the phone lines. I will ask a question about the Carol Burnett Show that I'm going to say on the scale of 1 to 10 is probably around a 7 or maybe 8 in terms of difficulty.
So 10 being the most difficult.
10 would be the hardest possible question.
Okay.
Like if I said, name everybody that was ever on the Carol Burnett Show.
That would be a 10. Yeah.
But if I said, what is Carol Burnett's name? That would be a 1. That'd be really easy.
That's super easy.
That's way too easy.
Unless Carol Burnett's not really her name. It is, right?
It is her name, yeah.
You know,
but
unless
right.
she changed it.
If I was
it,
trying
you know,
to
Judy
trick
Garland.
People, yeah. Yeah. Right. So that's your spectrum right there. I will put my trivia question today about Carol Burnett at right around a 7. So if you think you know a little something or if you love the work of Carol Burnett, call right now at 312-981-7200. We will take you in no particular order. I will ask my question. If you get it right, you get a pair of tickets to see Carol Burnett. It's just that simple.
Awesome.
Andrea, right now I'm going to ask you to choose a number between 1 and 5, and they will be our first contestant.
I'm going
to
say 5.
Number 5. Line 5, who is this, please?
Oh, I chose poorly.
They're very shy.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on, let me see if we can talk to them. Line 5, hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
What is your name, sir?
My name's Dave.
Dave, I'm going to ask you a Carol Burnett trivia question. If you get it right, you're going to get to see Carol Burnett on June the 13th at the Chicago Theater. Are you ready?
Yes, I am.
In 1977, Harvey Korman decided to leave the Carol Burnett Show. He was replaced by what comedy legend?
Tim Conway.
Tim Conway is incorrect. Tim Conway was already a cast member of the Carol Burnett Show. Thank you, though, for playing. Have a happy holiday.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
Sorry about the weird buzzing noise.
It was a very rude
buzzing noise.
I know, I can't wait.
Andrea is guessing, and she put a name down. Andrea, you are not going to see Carol Burnett on June the 13th. Okay. That is incorrect.
Not that I can win anyway.
Choose a number between 1 and 5.
2.
2. Line 2, welcome to Bill and Andrea filling in for Wendy. Who is this, please?
This is Lorraine Ryan.
Lorraine, I wish you nothing but good luck. The same question goes to you. In 1977, Harvey Korman decided to leave the Carol Burnett Show. He was replaced by what comedy legend?
Ooh. I don't know. Tim Conway, but I know that.
No, that was the last. Everyone's guessing Tim Conway.
Yeah.
He was already with the show, so incorrect. I'm sorry, but thank you. Have a great Christmas. Great holiday.
Thank you too.
Take care.
Mm-hmm.
Bye. For everybody listening, it is not. The answer will not be Tim Conway.
No, Tim was already
with the show.
Don't guess that.
And I'm going to also say don't guess Lyle Wagner.
He was going to be my other guess, but he's not funny. He's not a comedian.
He was just handsome, but he was with the Carol Burnett Show for years. Actually, Tim Conway, believe it or not, kind of replaced him.
Yeah, because didn't he go do Wonder? Wasn't he Steve Trevor then?
He left the show to do other things, and yeah, he was Steve Trevor and Wonder Woman. Yeah. Pick a number between 1 and 5.
1.
Number 1. Line 1, who is this, please?
My name's Barbie.
Barbie, welcome to the show. Same question goes to you. Harvey Korman was replaced by what comedy legend in 1977 on The Carol Burnett Show?
Was it Lyle?
No, it is not Lyle Wagner. It is not. He had already been with the show.
Yeah.
But thank you, Barbie. Okay. Nice try. Thank you very much.
Nor is it Tim Conway.
It is not going to be. Here's the ones it won't be. Tim Conway, Lyle Wagner, or Carol Burnett.
Okay, good.
Those are the three.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now somebody's going to guess Vicki Lawrence. You know that, right?
Yes.
Andrea, if you would, a number between 1 and 5.
Let's go 4.
Number 4 this time. Line 4, who is this? Hello, line 4? Is this Tim Conway?
It's not Lyle Wagner.
It's not Lyle Wagner.
It's not Tim Conway.
It's not Tim Conway.
I don't think it'd be Vicki Lawrence either.
It is not Nelson Rockefeller.
No.
Oh. Caller, line 4, can you hear me? Nope. Okay. I had a feeling they might have gotten it right, too.
I do, too. Let's go 3.
Number 3. Hello, line 3. Who is this?
My name is Bob.
Bob, good luck to you. Who replaced Harvey Korman for only half a season back in 1977? Harvey Korman left the Carol Burnett Show, and who filled in?
I'm going to hope, especially since comedy legend, Dick Van Dyke.
Dick Van Dyke is a very interesting answer, and it happens to be the right one.
Oh, good
How guess. About that? Dick Van Dyke, how did you know that?
Well, the scene with Tim Conway with the elephant at the circus with the little monkey that runs down his trunk.
Yes.
And the sound that Tim Conway makes, I believe watching that scene, I thought Dick was going to pee in his pants and was laughing so loud.
Well, just for remembering that, you get to see Carol Burnett. How about that?
Well,
a pair of
wonderful.
Tickets to see Carol Burnett on June the 13th. Due to overwhelming demand, Carol Burnett has added a second and final event at the Chicago Theater on June the 13th. You can get tickets at Ticketmaster.com or by phone at ChicagoTheater.com on your internet. But you've just won a pair. Stay on the line and we'll get all your information. Congrats.
Great.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Happy holidays.
And to you.
That's a great guess.
That was fun.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
One of my favorite scenes was the dentist scene when I think Harvey Korman was in the dental chair and Tim Conway just kept poking at him and poking at him and he's losing it.
Hysterical.
I love when they just break character.
Yeah.
And he's got cotton in his mouth and he couldn't, you know, he's laughing so hard.
It became a weekly thing if Harvey Korman and Tim Conway weren't making it, you go, something's wrong. How are they not making each other laugh? All right, good luck, everybody. Get to see Carol Burnett. You get to see Carol Burnett at the Chicago Theater. If you want to go to Ticketmaster, they have more available tickets. We'll take a quick break and then more show. It's Bill and Andrea in for Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Andrea Darlis filling in for Wendy. Wendy will be back in a couple of weeks. She had knee surgery. Everything went well. She was on the show yesterday and talked about her recoup, so she's fine.
She feels good.
Yeah.
She's up and about.
Yes.
She's walking.
Yeah.
She's doing flips.
Yep.
Not yet.
Flips are still a couple days away.
Yeah.
But she will be doing more flips. That's her New Year's resolution. During the last couple of days, you attended a service, a funeral.
Yeah, a wake.
And it's sad, but something happened that I find fascinating.
Yes.
You were telling me this off air. Please share this.
A friend of mine's mom passed away, who I knew as well. And we went to the service and got there early. You know how they're kind of from like 3 to 9. So we got there kind of on the early side. Because I don't know, lately, don't you think now more and more people are kind of attending wakes and it's just the one day and it's a shorter period of time.
Yes.
So they tend to fill up and you have to wait in line for a while. So we went on the early side and I met some friends of friends, some mutual friends. And we started talking and telling stories, and we were kind of laughing. And at one point, we're, you know, in the back of the room where the wake is being held, laughing and laughing. And then they have a little video montage, too, of everything going on. And there's pictures of, you know, the lady who died, her daughter's dogs. And it's very cute.
Yeah.
So I said to you, I said, it was strange at one point because we were laughing and laughing and laughing. I mean, really like a belly laugh. And I thought, oh, my God, is this appropriate? And you said your response was great.
I think it is because what's happening there is you're telling about magical moments from this person's life. You're paying tribute to them. So even though if people don't know exactly what's going on and they hear laughter, it may be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I think what you're doing was a good thing.
I think so, too.
Don't
I think
you?
So, too. And I think some of the younger people who were there looked over and thought, oh, you know, we're we're talking, and today we're texting, and we're making dinner plans, and you know. But I'm wondering if maybe some of the older folks who were there were taking offense. You know, were they thinking,
maybe.
Oh, don't be laughing. This is a somber time.
Maybe.
But I think kind of like you said, Bill, it's a time to laugh too, because you know, we remember, you know, you remember your mom's and my dad's way. You're laughing, you're crying, you're laughing, you're crying. It's just kind of an emotional day, but I don't think laughter is bad.
I would hope if I die, and I may not. Yeah. I'm still trying to decide.
You're on the fence about it.
But if at some point I decide, yeah, maybe I'll die. When they have a service for me, I would want people laughing. I would want there to be some merriment, because even though I know it's grim, the person is no longer with you. There's always going to be happy memories, and that what better time to share them than right there at the service?
Oh, I think so too. In fact, there was you know, you put the pictures up. This was a video, but when at my dad's wake, we were finding these old pictures from old family vacations, and we had gone. Oh, I forget where we even went, and my dad and I were standing there, and I was wearing like these blue. They were just stunning, Bill. They were like this, like robin egg blue, almost like a baby blue parachute pant.
Oh, nice.
And then my Def Leppard t-shirt, which was ripped on the side.
That stuff never goes out of style.
Yeah, so always you can see style. Like my tank top underneath. That picture got so, and I just was putting it up because it was a nice picture of me and my dad on vacation.
Tomorrow, please, I'd like to get a look at that.
Yeah, we can show you that, Kim, right, absolutely.
Kim? So I thought, what that picture got so many Kim, I think you might have even been one to comment on that picture.
Oh, maybe.
But
it wouldn't surprise me.
Like, Darlis, what are you wearing? A nice perm and nice blue eyeshadow. Mm. But that was funny. So, you know, and now I think people are like, oh, let's put these crazy pictures up because they're fun.
All right. So a couple of decades ago, I don't remember that. And boy, it seemed like when I was younger, because my mom comes from a very large family, there was it seemed like a funeral or a service almost every month. And I don't remember them doing pictures. I mean, the video aspect of it was impossible at that point.
Yeah.
But now over the last couple of years, almost every service I've gone to has included that. And I like that.
I do, too.
I think that's such a good thing.
Me, too.
Yeah.
And we were trying to think, too, like, okay, Bill's going to be coming or his friends. We were trying to get pictures of all the different groups of friends in there.
Oh, that's a nice touch,
so they could
too.
Come in. Because then they kind of come in and go, oh, yeah, I remember that Christmas or that holiday.
I told this story the other day upstairs on the bonus hour, but I'll just quickly I'll tell you a very fast version of it.
Yeah.
A very close friend of our family's died on Friday, and there was a memorial at her husband's house on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And they had a kind of a slide presentation on a widescreen TV showing her throughout her life, and it was fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, it was wonderful. And at some point, the story was told by one of her daughters about how when her dog had died, she was very, very close to this dog, and she didn't know how to keep the dog's memory alive. So what she did was she took the dog's fur and had it made into sweaters for all of her children. So they told this story, and we were hysterical. And she thought, she was very, you know, such a kind woman, and she thought, this is such a nice thing that I'm doing. But as they all opened them up at the same time and just burst into laughter, it made her laugh, and that made the story even better, because she realized, even though it was supposed to be a well-intentioned gift, it was ridiculous. They were never going to wear a dog hair sweater.
Oh, no. I'm seeing a lot of regifting this holiday season, Bill.
Right.
Wow. Why did you bring me a sweater?
When you get
dog
hair sweater, don't... Just don't ask questions. Just put it on.
I'm not going to judge you.
It's going to look good. But honestly, the whole process, especially, I know that these ceremonies can be very solemn. I get that. And it is a time of reverence, but you're celebrating somebody's life.
Right.
Why not? If you can have a laugh.
Oh, I agree.
Grab it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know?
And I think a good time to do it.
Oh,
so,
good.
Yeah. So thank you for kind of reaffirming my bad behavior.
I hope so. all right. So upstairs in a little while, this is the game plan.
Yes.
We will do the bonus hour. You and I will go upstairs. If you've not listened to the bonus hour in the past, it's very simple to do. You just go to WGNradio.com. There's a tab there that you can click on and you can hear Andrea and I online. We'll be there from 12 to 1 o'clock. If you don't want to do that, that's good too. Steve Bertrand will be in and give you the Wintrust business lunch. It should be a good one. We'll talk to Steve in just a little bit. So stick around. It's Bill and Andrea in for Wendy on WGN. All right. Upstairs, Andrea, you and I are going to discuss this to some extent. Google every year, right around now, right around mid-December, releases the most Googled topics in several different categories for the year. So let's just start out really quickly with news stories. They list the top five. What do you think were the five most Googled news stories? Just give me one or two guesses. What news stories?
One would have to be one of the disasters, the hurricanes.
Number one, Hurricane Irma was the most Googled news story of 2017.
Harvey,
by far, actually.
Oh, Irma, just Irma.
Hurricane Irma.
Wow, okay.
Number two is something from the tech world.
Oh, I was going to guess hashtag Me Too.
Me Too didn't make their top five. Okay. It may have been further down the line. It only shows the top five in every category.
Something from the tech world.
Actually, two and three were both from the tech world.
I'd say the iPhone 10.
iPhone 8.
Oh, the 8. Okay.
Yeah, and the iPhone X, which is the 10.
The 10.
Right?
Okay.
Do they call it the X?
I think I would. I just say the 10.
No, the 10.
I just got the 8.
I don't speak Roman numerals, so when I see an X, I just say X.
I have a friend who's he's a twin.
Yeah.
So they wanted to get the 10. He and his brother.
Yeah.
And see if they could fake the iPhone 10 out. I said, that's the only reason that you bought the $1,000 phone.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
That's why.
See if we can
that's
fake
why.
It out.
Number four and five are celebrities. These are newsworthy celebrities of the most Googled items in 2017, most Googled topics. Number four, one of the guys in the sexual harassment scandal, that would be Matt Lauer.
Oh, I would say Harvey Weinstein.
Didn't make the top five. My guess is he was probably in the top 20.
Yeah,
I don't know for sure where,
so
but
Matt
somewhere
Lauer.
In there. And number five is an actress who went into
hiding.
I was going to say another line of work.
An actress who went into another line of work.
You could almost qualify this as hiding, but hiding in plain sight.
Okay. I don't know. Not Kardashian.
Meghan Markle.
Oh, yeah. Prince
Harry's
fiancée.
Yeah,
yes. I would Google her.
Yeah.
I think I did.
Yep. Yep. Well, she's somebody that.
No, not for that.
Very
Look
few
at
people.
Both
have,
you guys are like, ooh.
Not me.
No.
Very few people knew who she was at this time last year, and now, you know, good luck finding an internet page that doesn't feature a story about her.
There was only one person who watched Suits, which was her show with regularity.
And that
Do
was?
Do you have any idea?
No.
Dave Ennett.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Big fan of Suits.
He was a big fan of Suits.